Hello and welcome to Behind the Health Statistic. My name is Lara Kaup and I am a lecturer at Cardiff University School of Healthcare Sciences. In this episode of the Women's Health series, we'll be speaking to Jessica from North Wales. Jessica has experienced recurrent miscarriage under the Welsh healthcare system, and as a consequence of her experiences, has gone on to campaign for improved care in Wales for both the physical and psychological impacts of pregnancy loss and recurrent pregnancy loss. Statistics around miscarriage are difficult because there is not currently a system in place to record this information. This is something that Tommies are campaigning for, and it is hoped that this could be included in the Women's Health Strategy for Wales that Fair Treatment for the Women of Wales is working on. What we can say is that a pregnancy loss or miscarriage is defined as the spontaneous demise of a pregnancy before the baby reaches viability. The term therefore includes all pregnancy losses from the time of conception until 24 weeks of gestation. Up to 1 in 4 women will experience a miscarriage in their lifetime. Amongst those women who know that they are pregnant, it is estimated that 1 in 5 pregnancies end in miscarriage. Miscarriages are often referred to as early or late. An early miscarriage is a pregnancy loss that takes place within 13 completed weeks of pregnancy. A pregnancy loss between weeks 14 and 24 is referred to as a late loss. Late losses are much less common than early losses, and early losses account for over 50,000 admissions in the UK annually, which will equate to approximately 2,500 admissions in Wales. Miscarriage can cause both significant physical symptoms and pain, as well as considerable psychological distress. So let's go over to the conversation now with Jessica. Hi Jess, thanks for joining me today.
Morning.
Morning. Thank you very much for giving your time for this episode of the Women's Health podcast series. And today we're going to be talking about miscarriage and your experience of that. So really grateful to you for sharing your story with me. I just wonder if we could start with talking about what is miscarriage to begin with, so that our listeners can kind of have a bit of understanding of what it is.
Yeah, so miscarriage essentially is the loss of a pregnancy. Up to, it always astounds me actually that it's up to such a late stage, but it's up to around the 23 week mark, I believe, that the loss of a pregnancy would be classed as a miscarriage. They tend to kind of separate it into first trimester losses, which is up to about 13 completed weeks, and second trimester losses, which would be from about 13 completed weeks up to 23 weeks. I believe after that, that loss of that pregnancy would be viewed as a stillbirth.
Okay, and from your experience then, what was your first experience of a miscarriage?
Yeah, quite a long time ago now. It was about a year after I'd got married to my husband, and we decided we wanted to start a family. And it all went astonishingly smoothly, really, as we thought it was going smoothly. So it took about 3 months and found I was pregnant. And yeah, I think you just think that's it, don't you? That's great, I'm going to have a baby. And you have this whole picture in your mind about how that's going to be and how that's going to go. And then I think at about 6 weeks, I started to just experience some light spotting. Which even though kind of miscarriage hadn't occurred to me as an option, I think as soon as that happened, my stomach just went. I knew that this wasn't right, but obviously talked myself into believing it was fine. You do the Dr. Google, and you read about implantation bleeding and all these things, and that it's not necessarily a bad sign. So I went to the doctor. They referred me to the early pregnancy unit, where they scanned me. And at that point, there was a little heartbeat, and everything looked fine. And so they just said, but they did see what they thought were other spaces. So they thought it might have been a multiple pregnancy, actually, or that there was a chance that that perhaps even a triple pregnancy. They were talking about triplets at one point. They thought that maybe one of them had kind of not progressed, and that might have been what was causing the bleeding. So they wanted me to come back in a fortnight to check whether there were two pregnancies there or just the one. Had a little bit of spotting in that 2 week interim period, but of course at that point, because I'd kind of been given that reason, I thought everything's fine. And then when I went back after the 2 weeks, it was, yeah, it was just those words that nobody wants to hear. You're sorry, there's no heartbeat. Yeah, and that was it, really. It was, they just said, well, you can leave it to happen naturally, or we can offer you what they call DNC, which is where they basically, it's like a minor surgery where they'll clear everything out. And I think for me at that point, I just thought, I don't know, that felt like a choice, and I didn't want to be making a choice or a decision about what was happening. So I let it all happen naturally. And that, you know, that was weird as well, because I was about 8 weeks at that point and you're kind of still pregnant, but and nothing was happening. And it took a good couple of weeks for things to really happen after that as well. So so that was, yeah, that was a strange experience, but I still think that's what I've done with all of my miscarriages. It kind of happened naturally. I've never gone down the surgery route, which is everyone's different in terms of what they choose. But yeah, going through that period where you are pregnant but you're not pregnant is very, very strange. But yeah.
So Jess, how many miscarriages have you had in total?
I've had six in total. So I had two. So yeah, I went on after that first one to have another one at around the same point in the pregnancy. And then with that third pregnancy, I got pregnant, had a normal pregnancy with my little boy, who's now six. and then again, I thought, yeah, that's it. It's just my body was kind of figuring out what to do and everything would be fine now. And he hit about 18 months, and then we thought, right, 1 second. And then all happened again. So we went on to have another four losses after Will was born. And then we had a successful pregnancy again with Ollie, who is now 18 months old. And everything was, again, straightforward with him.
It's been quite a journey for you and your husband then. Having children, it's not been straightforward, has it?
Yeah, no, it's not been straightforward. And it's been very different, kind of the losses prior to Will and then the losses prior to Ollie, all heartbreaking in their own way. Dealing with it when I had a baby to look after was or a young child to look after was difficult. But equally, I think it was easier at the same time because I knew I had Will, I knew I could have a baby, I knew that likelihood was if I kept pushing that we would get there in the end. And I think with the early ones, it was that terror really that it was never going to happen for us. And that adds a whole kind of extra layer, I think, to the grief and yeah, that not knowing if that's something your body's actually going to be able to do for you is really hard. So I think, yeah, before Ollie came along, I knew that it could happen. And it, ultimately we had Will. If it didn't happen, then I think whilst it would have been difficult, I would have found it easier to cope with than for it to have never happened at all.
how did you find the reaction from other people in terms of having a miscarriage? Because one of the things that women hear a lot, particularly having a miscarriage within the first 12 weeks of a pregnancy, one of the things that women get told is, oh, it's really common.
I think, I mean, friends and family were great. Those who knew, we hadn't told many people. And we didn't the first time round. We didn't really tell many people at all, but those who did know were really supportive and good. And as time went on, it happened more often. More people were aware in those situations. I think it just gets easier to talk about. People kind of know your situation anyway, so it's easier to kind of say, well, you know, this has happened. I think even in the hospital, actually, on the first one, it's kind of, oh, well, this is really common, you know, it happens to, you know, I was shocked, actually, since it's like 1 in 4 pregnancies ends this way, and which wasn't helpful, actually, to hear that in the hospital in particular. It wasn't recently heard from friends, and they didn't mean it unkindly, but at the same time, it just kind of felt like it just was diminishing that experience. And from a really horrible and selfish perspective, I guess I just thought, well, yeah, but they're other people's babies. This is my baby, you know, that I've lost, and I don't want it reduced to just a statistic. It's, you know, that's a life that would have been there and that I had all planned out. And, you know, so I don't think here, some people do find it helpful. I didn't find it helpful at all. And then you obviously get the odd well-meaning person saying, oh, you know, at least you know you can get pregnant. And you're kind of like, well, yeah, I can get pregnant. That doesn't mean I know that I can have a baby or that my body's capable of carrying that baby full term. So as well meant as those comments are, they certainly weren't helpful. And, you know, in some respects we were lucky, we never found the conception side that difficult, but still, as I say, doesn't make the loss any easier. But I do feel for people who, you know, we did have one pregnancy where it did take a long time, and that felt particularly difficult because, you know, you've been building to this, and so there's a lot of hopes pinned on it again, but there we go.
So did you have any access to services at all in terms of support, but also at any point did you have any investigations or anything as to why this was happening?
Yeah, so the short answer is no, but it's a bit more complicated than that. So I was living in England when I had my first two losses. We moved back to Wales when I was pregnant with Will. The early pregnancy unit in England was quite good, just in terms of how it was structured and the kind of privacy and the dignity there was quite good. So I found that side of the treatment good in England, although in terms of kind of follow-up care at that time, there was nothing in terms of support. It was just kind of leaflets and here's a number you can call if you're not struggling. There was no one followed up with me or called me to see how I was coping. I didn't really get warned, I suppose, about how I might be affected emotionally and psychologically by this, because it's such, you know, when it happens the first time, it's such a huge shock. And I think, you know, that kind of old adage, oh, it was early, you know, it was only a couple of weeks, I think you tell yourself that as well, and you kind of, so then it can be really confusing as to why you're feeling so bad about it, and how, why you're finding it so difficult to kind of get over it, so to speak, and move on from it. So that came as quite a shock to me. I just did not expect to be as affected by it as I was, but there was no kind of follow-up or check-up on how I was coping, or just even a kind of like, if you feel like this, it's normal. Actually, a lot of people do feel this way, so don't feel, you know, I didn't tell my employer as well, so like I said to you earlier, it was a miscarriage. So when I actually did go through the miscarriage, I was working and I didn't know how to really tell my employer. So I kind of just worked through it. I was sat in a meeting having the most horrendous pains and losing the baby essentially, and just working through it, which wasn't great. So I think more help from the hospital on that front would have been good, just in helping me to navigate that whole side of things. So no, there was no follow-up. And when I went on to have the losses in Wales, it was exactly the same. There were just like leaflets, no follow-up to kind of check how you're coping. In terms of why it was happening and investigations on that front, I think it hit me really hard on the second loss that I was kind of like, right, okay, this isn't just bad luck now, come on, it's happened twice. And they're like, well, it's got to happen a third time before you class as recurrent miscarriage. So the definition that we're still going with in this country of recurrent miscarriage is 3 consecutive losses. So I fell foul of that because I had 2 losses. And then thankfully, obviously, everything was great with the third pregnancy. But that also meant that to count for investigations for a recurrent miscarriage, I'd need to go through a further 3 losses after that before they'd do any investigations. So it really shocked me, I think, on the second one. I was like, what, really? You're not going to do anything. You're not going to do any kind of investigations. And they were like, no. And that made, obviously, my pregnancy with Will was so stressful because you're just constantly worried and anxious that something's going to go wrong the whole way through, you know, and actually once they're born as well, it really does affect you, I think, in terms of your ability to, I think it just opens your mind to all the things that can go wrong in a way that, you know, it's all very, you're aware of it before, but it's all hypothetical, isn't it? It's not something real. And then it happens to you and you're like, oh my gosh, this can actually happen to me. And it means that all of the other horrendous things that you hear about can genuinely happen to you. You just suddenly become much more anxious than you were before. So yeah, and actually no recognition of that in my pregnancies either, really. So kind of during the pregnancy and even once my little boy had arrived, no kind of acknowledgement of the potential psychological impact that can have well into them being with you and safe in your arms. It doesn't just go away, that worry and that anxiety. So I didn't get any investigations, but obviously Will came along, so that was great. And then went through 2 more losses. To be fair to my GP in Wales, they did refer me to the local early pregnancy unit for investigations. At that point, I discovered Tommy's, which is the baby loss charity, who in England, they've got they've got 3 centres of a kind of excellent for miscarriage research, and they are kind of basically, they have specialist recurrent miscarriage clinics where they will conduct investigations. They also do clinical trials, so they'll look at various new potential treatments and you can be part of those trials. So I was desperate to kind of get a referral to those clinics, and on the Tommy's website it says, all you need to do is talk to your GP. We have patient choice in this country. So you can tell your GP you'd like to be referred to us and they have to refer you. So I was like, brilliant, excellent. I can go and see a specialist, because I'd had some pretty unpleasant experiences in the early pregnancy unit locally to me by that point. So I really, really didn't want to be treated in that hospital. But, which I'm happy to talk about those experiences later if you want to, but essentially my GP said to me, no, we don't have patient choice in Wales. You can only be referred locally to a local gynae. At which point I was horrified by this, partly because of the bad experiences I had and partly because I think, like anyone really, you want to be seen by someone who you really feel confident knows what's happening, knows what they're doing, knows is an expert in that field. And, you know, being involved in the research trials, definitely not something that I would have been able to do being treated locally. So that was really devastating because it just made you feel like no one cared. And then when I did go and see them locally, my appointment kept being cancelled. It was cancelled like 3 or 4 times, once on like literally the 5 o'clock in the evening, where my appointment was at 9:30 the next morning. And, you know, I went in and they did the bloods, they did the, you know, it was in and out. There was no kind of follow-up information, no information on what to do if I got pregnant, no number I could call to contact them on if I got pregnant. And then when I did get pregnant again, they are supposed to allow you to come in for a 6 and 8 week scan, I believe. You know, you should be able to self-refer to the early pregnancy unit. But on that particular pregnancy, that one went longer. I think it went, that was the one I lost at 12 weeks in the end. But I had to fight and fight and fight to get them to see me. I couldn't self-refer, which I was supposed to be able to do. You know, I had people saying to me, well, just say you've had some bleeding so they'll see you. And I'm kind of like, I don't want to make up stuff to get the care that I should be entitled to. And for someone who's kind of experienced that and gone through those losses, to kind of say that something's happened to that pregnancy that's not, is actually quite a traumatic thing to do, and you shouldn't have to do it to get the care that you want to do. So in the end, I did manage to get a scan. It was a complicated pregnancy because it was in I've got a slightly what they call an arcuate uterus, so it's slightly heart-shaped, and the pregnancy was very close to the opening to my right fallopian tube. So they did follow-up scans and did one at 9 weeks, and baby was moving and wriggling, and so thinking, oh gosh, yeah, this is going to be it, this is going to be okay this time. And then I got some bleeding, and I called the early pregnancy unit and they wouldn't see me. I got all called my midwife, and they called the early pregnancy unit, and they, and my, I think by this point, my 12 week scan was, this was on maybe the Thursday, and my 12 week scan was booked for the Monday. And they were saying, no, just keep to your 12 week scan. And I was saying, you've told me this is, you're uncertain of the location of this, that there's, you know, danger of it rupturing the fallopian tube, you know, you need to see me, and they wouldn't. I ended up having to do a big kind of stream on Twitter, like a thread on Twitter, kind of ranting basically about the situation, tagging in the world. I tagged in the health minister, and I tagged in my local assembly member, as they were at the time, and tagged in lots of different people, tagged in the health board. And next thing I know, I was having a phone call saying, go to the early pregnancy unit, please. They want to see you. But it just, the fact that it took that to be seen in the pregnancy unit when I was nearly 12 weeks pregnant with bleeding, that they themselves had told me was, you know, in a slightly risky location, was just was just shocking. Yeah. So in the end, I did manage to round the houses, get a referral to Tommy's, and I never got any real clear answers about why it was happening. But just be seen, it would have just been so nice to have been seen there, and to have been supported in future pregnancies. And I think that's the thing that's really missing in Wales in particular. You only get local care, which, you know, in some cases I'm sure is very good, in other cases it's really not. There's a lack of communication. They're not dedicated recurrent miscarriage clinics, so it's long waiting times, which, you know, when you're likely to fall pregnant in the meantime, or particularly, you know, some people that they're getting older, you know, you see them saying, oh, you don't leave it too long, you don't want to be too old, you know, the risk goes up the older you get, and then they're making you wait for nearly a year to actually see somebody about what's happening to you. It's kind of really contradictory, isn't it? So there's no access to specialist clinics or specialists in Wales. You can't access treatment in specialist clinics, and because of that, often you don't have that support in future pregnancies either. So it's really inconsistent, I think, is the key message I'd give the care. And they really need to do something about that, because, you know, it's when you're having to fight, when you lose babies, particularly when they're early on, that whole sense of disenfranchised grief, I guess, where you don't feel like you're entitled to feel as sad and as upset as you do. To have that reinforced by the medical services, because you can't see a specialist, you're not supported in future pregnancies. It's like all the care around that is reinforcing that message that it doesn't matter because it was early. And I think that's the really damaging thing about it, and the lack of access to services in Wales.
Yeah, that's really interesting what you said there about, you know, the lack of access to services and support, particularly in relation to, you know, early miscarriages, mm-hmm. almost compounding the feelings that women get that, well, I shouldn't be upset, or I shouldn't be grieving because it's early, or because it's common, or it's before the 12-week mark, or it's before this mark, and there's no support available anyway, so that must mean that it's like it's not important.
Yeah, and I'm not normal for feeling the way that I do feel about it.
Yeah.
Whereas certainly from my experience, the vast majority of women who go through this are deeply, deeply affected by their experience and do need that support and do need that help.
How has that left you feeling about the support and services that are local to you or available to you or within Wales, sort of in terms of, like you said, not being able to be referred to specialists, and, you know, your experience of, you know, the care at the early pregnancy unit and how you've had to, like you say, you use the word like having to fight for what you did get, having to take to social media for somebody to hear you. How has that left you feeling?
Yeah, angry, I think, is the right word for it. I mean, I've tried to make it into something productive. So I'm now kind of, I wrote very, very lengthy kind of complaint letters about my treatment, and kind of had my member of the Senate involved in that, who was very supportive. And since I've been involved in all kind of like task and finish groups with the health board to look at them reviewing their services and improving their services, and they are looking at more dedicated services in my area, I think in large part as a result of that. I also started a petition to have miscarriage services improved in Wales, and that was really successful. It was debated, you know, wrote a report into miscarriage services in Wales that was debated in the Senate, so kind of tried to turn it into something productive and just really hoping to change things and improve things for women going through the same thing in the future. But it does make you feel very angry and let down, because really it's just trauma on top of trauma is the best way I can put it. You're already going through, you know, the most difficult traumatic experience, and then it's just like they just whack the layers on top of that. We're gonna treat you with a kind of lack of dignity, lack of privacy in the early pregnancy unit. We're gonna refuse you referrals to specialist care that might actually give you some answers about why this is happening to you, you know, and it just, you've got to fight at a time when really you've got no fight in you. You know, you just want to recover and kind of try and move forward in a positive way, and it just, all of that just makes that impossible.
Are there any like guidelines or anything like that advises our, you know, health services and departments how to, or, you know, what care women should be having in terms of the miscarriages themselves and the investigations, but also you've talked quite a lot about the emotional and psychological impact as well. So
I mean, not really. So there are the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, there's their guidance, which I think is generally the guidance that departments will use, which is mainly medical. They're reviewing it at the moment, but it's kind of mainly looking at the kind of clinical side to how they should treat you. It doesn't really focus so much on the bereavement side. It kind of touches on it, but not in any great detail. You've also got Tommy's have just brought out kind of a graded model of care that I think they are hoping that clinics around the country and early pregnancy units around the country will use. But again, there's nothing statutory in that. Ultimately, it's down to the individual departments. And I think really, obviously, I think clinically, that's fine. In terms of the tests and treatments, I think to a degree that's fine. It is the care, the wraparound care, in terms of how you're supported in future pregnancies and how your that kind of bereavement essentially that you've been through is dealt with. And in Wales, we are really lacking in that front as well, sadly. So in England and also rolling out in Scotland, they have the National Bereavement Care Pathways, which have been developed by SANS, which basically give very clear guidelines on how to support families going through this. And they've got one specifically for miscarriage, for ectopic pregnancy, stillbirth. So it's very specific to the loss that people are experiencing as well. But we don't have that in Wales. Welsh government hasn't signed up to that. They are in the process of developing kind of general bereavement standards. And I'm sitting on a group again that's looking at that. I'm very much hoping that as we move forward, they will begin to look at specific bereavement care pathways for pregnancy and baby loss, because they don't exist at the moment. The only kind of clear guidance, as far as I'm aware, that exists are kind of the maternity standards, which only really covers losses after around the 18-week mark. So there is nothing statutory, for want of a better word, prior to that point in terms of how health boards and clinicians need to support women. So really, again, that just means that we're compounding the expectation that we just shove a few leaflets into their hands and send them on their way, which when you look at statistics of the amount of women who go on to experience post-traumatic stress disorders, you know, as a consequence of their losses, serious depression, suicide rates are higher in women who have experienced losses. So, you know, there is so much evidence of the profound emotional and psychological impact that miscarriage, whatever stage, has on women. The fact that we don't have any clear guidance to in terms of how to support those women, and particularly pick up on those who are really struggling with those quite severe consequences, psychological consequences from it, is really quite shocking. You know, that was still, this was debated in the Senate in 2018, where they were talking about bereavement standards for pregnancy and baby loss. And they passed that motion that some should be introduced, and yet it still hasn't happened. So it's really quite shocking.
Why do you think there is that delay, or I don't know what the right word is to use, but why do you think it's taking so long to put any of these things into action? Because it sounds like there's been a lot of things that you've been involved with to raise the profile of this within Wales. So, you know, has there been any indication as to why it's taking so long?
I think partly it's the COVID situation that has delayed things, but I think that can only be part of the reason, really. I think when they first made the group to look at the standards, when after it was debated in the Senate, it was then merged into a broader group looking at general bereavement, and that took time. And then COVID came along, but the group was still meeting. But I guess I guess because of COVID and obviously significant bereavement impacts of that, the kind of focus shifted a little bit. And so now it's just a case of trying to really fight and push to get that brought back onto the agenda, because it, you know, it's still massively important, as are other types of bereavement, of course, but this is still important. And it's just not right, is it, that we've got the nations that are, you know, really putting things in place to support women, and yet in Wales it's just not happening, or it's taking an unreasonably long time to get that in place. And all the time while that's happening, we've got more and more women experiencing this and not having the support that they need. And actually that support is probably less because of COVID. You know, they're having to go through these losses without their partners. They're going to scans and their partners aren't allowed into scans, and they're being told they've lost their baby and they're on their own, and they can't have their partners with them in the early pregnancy units, and they can't get as much support. They can't be in hospital as often with the, you know, when they are pregnant, or, and obviously the fear and the anxiety around those pregnancies is greater because of the associated risk with COVID. So actually it's more needed now than less, but yeah, it's not happening just yet.
I'm just wondering, what has been the impact of your miscarriages and your experiences on you and your husband as a couple?
Difficult one to say, but in a strange way it's probably made us stronger as a couple. I think we've always been on the kind of the same page with it, and it's kind of that need to support each other, I think, has probably made us closer actually, rather than less close. But it can be a very difficult thing for couples as well, I think, to navigate. I think we've been fortunate in that respect that it's not kind of affected us as a couple too badly. It's affected us both individually, of course, but generally it's been okay in that front for us. But, you know, I've spoken to people, and people who've talked to me who, you know, their relationships have broken down as a consequence of it. If they don't feel supported, or if they don't feel, you know, or they're on a different page in terms of being ready to try again or not, as the case may be, and that can be tricky as well.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about the impact on you, and you talked about the, you know, the emotional and the psychological impact, and you have your two boys now. But generally, what would you say is, how has this impacted your life, and where are you at now with that?
I'm in a good place now, but yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I think it affected me more when I had my first little boy, partly because the anxiety was so great when he was through the pregnancy and when he was born, and then going through the losses when he was little. I did get worried at one stage, thought, oh, I don't want all of his early years to just be associated with feeling sad and feeling like wanting another baby. I've got this baby, this child here who I absolutely adore, and I don't think it ever affected him, but I didn't want my kind of memories of his early childhood to be dominated by those experiences. So that was difficult. Now Ollie's here, I think it's, you know, it's in a really good place. You know, that sadness and that kind of frustration about the way you're treated, I think, is always going to be there and linger. But it's I feel, you know, that we are where we want to be, and knowing that you've got there is a big, big kind of relief, a big weight off your shoulders. It does really make it all a lot easier. It doesn't take away from the grief that you've experienced, but all those question marks and the fighting to get the treatment you want, and the, is it ever going to happen? You know, all of that's gone, and that is a huge weight off, and it does feel like you can just move forward with your life. I always thought I wanted three children, but best laid plans and all that. And it does affect you in that respect as well, like kind of you know, if we tried, obviously I'm older than I ever anticipated I would be at this stage. And so I've got to consider whether that would be fair. Obviously my risk of experiencing further losses is much greater, partly because I've been through so many losses, but also because I am older, and I don't think my husband's really up for kind of revisiting that experience. And I'm not sure whether I am either, really. I think we maybe just need to be happy with our lot, but coming to terms with that in itself is quite tricky kind of thing, and knowing when to stop and when to not put yourself through. So that's still a debate I'm having in my head, but and that's all really a consequence of what we've been through in the past and the kind of the delays. And but you know, that's okay. I'm in a much better place than I was, and we know we're so lucky to be where we are, and so I definitely can't complain.
I mean, that's great, Jess. And what you said earlier, you said you were trying to turn this into something positive. So you know, I'm assuming from what you've told me that, you know, your experience has led you to be involved in the things that you've been involved with in terms of...
Oh yeah, definitely. I'd, you know, I never would have obviously even occurred to me if I hadn't been through the experiences that I've been through. But yeah, I think, you know, quite a lot of it was between Will and Ollie that I kind of first got involved in the petition and with Fair Treatment for the Women of Wales, which is kind of a patient lobby group that that kind of lobbies Welsh government to improve services basically for women. And that's led me to sit on a lot of these kind of groups as a patient representative. But yeah, it's definitely something I want to continue to be involved with, because until really we've achieved what we wanted to achieve when I set out, which is access to specialist services for women in Wales, decent bereavement care for loss at whatever stage in that pregnancy. Sounds so simple, doesn't it, when you put it like that? You know, that's all we want, but you know, that was what, 3-4 years ago started, and it's still very slow progress. But but yeah, once we achieve that, maybe I can move on and kind of feel happy with that. But that I'm approaching it from a much more positive place now. Definitely, it's not from kind of a place of going through it myself at that time. It's kind of just trying to make things better for other people, hopefully, and that they have better experiences in the future.
That would be amazing. And I really, really hope that all of these things happen for you and all the work that you've done, but also for the many women going through this. I just wonder if there's anyone listening to this who has experienced miscarriage, what would be your advice to them?
I think, that's really difficult actually, isn't it? Because we're all so different, I think, in how we respond to these things. But I think my key advice would be, however you feel is normal. You know, if you feel devastated by it and you're really struggling, then talk to people. You'd be surprised at how brilliant people can be and how supportive they can be. And, you know, keep that conversation open, and don't feel that just because it was early or whatever that it doesn't matter. It does, and how you're feeling is totally normal. Many other people react that way. And equally, if you don't feel like that, that's okay too. Everyone is different in terms of how they respond. Just know that whatever you are feeling is normal, and if you do feel that you're struggling, there is the help out there. It's not always that easy to come by, but there's some brilliant organizations, Tommy's, the Miscarriage Association, online forums in particular. There is the help and support out there, and I think many employers actually are much better than you anticipate they're going to be in these situations. Sadly, not all of them, but many are. So don't be afraid to talk. And again, whilst I said earlier the statistics don't help, it is common. You'd be surprised when you start talking about it how many people will be able to kind of empathise and sympathise because they've experienced it themselves, or they know someone close to them who's experienced it. And actually, you know, talking about it and bringing it up, it can be a much bigger help than you ever anticipate that it's going to be. So yeah, just do that. And hopefully, in terms of accessing services, just be your own advocate. You know, if you can, it's really difficult time, but don't be afraid to question, to ask questions, to insist on the kind of care that you expect to get, pick up the phone, talk to people, push, because again, it is out there. It's just sadly at the moment still we do need to sometimes push for it, and to just try not to be afraid to do that.
And in terms of if there are any healthcare professionals or healthcare students listening to this, is there any sort of take-home message you might have for them?
Yeah, I think my biggest message would be just remember that when you're treating women going through this, it's not just a clinical thing. It's a bereavement. It's a loss. And they won't all feel the same, but most of the women that you're going to be treating are going to be devastated. And they may have quite significant kind of impact psychologically from this. We've talked earlier about the kind of post-traumatic stress disorder some suffer, the high levels of depression, and the way you treat them and you talk to them when they're in that hospital can make all the difference to how they go away. Just taking the time to have a conversation with them about how they might feel. Conversation is so much better than a leaflet pressed into somebody's hand. Use their language. You know, if they're talking about their baby as a baby, use that language as well rather than the clinical language. Follow their lead. If you can just find the time to just have a conversation with them, show them that bit of empathy, then that can make all the difference to how they go on to deal with and cope with that loss that they've experienced.
That's some great advice there, Jess. Just want to say thank you so much again for your time and for sharing your experience with me.
That's no problem at all. It's quite cathartic actually to talk about it, but yeah, it brings back lots of feelings that you kind of think that you've put behind you, but it's still a good thing, I think, to to revisit sometimes.
Thank you so much to Jessica for sharing her experience with me and with you all who are listening to this. For more information on miscarriage, please check out the following organisations: Tommy's and the Miscarriage Association. If you're looking for advice, you could also follow Fair Treatment for the Women of Wales if you are living in Wales and accessing care in Wales.